Tonight, the Northport police defend their handling of the Brian Laundry fiasco. The chief of police says he's proud of how they handled the case. This after they let Brian slip away and mixed up Brian with his mom. Are they trying to rewrite history? Plus, the chilling final words of the cinematographer who was shot dead on Alec Baldwin's movie set, while the actor and his wife take heat online for what they posted on Halloween night. And it is a free country, right? You can show your private parts on any website you want. But should you then have every right to volunteer at your kid's elementary school? The debate straight ahead on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. The chief of the Northport Police Department is doubling down tonight. He is meeting his critics head on, answering to complaints that Brian Laundry managed to sneak out of his parents' house even with a live police camera trained squarely on the home. It was a colossal mistake that resulted in the death of Brian Laundry, the only person of interest in the case. It also means that Gabby Petito's family may never have the satisfaction of true justice in her death. So you would think that the chief might offer up some regrets, maybe an apology, perhaps an explanation. Instead, there was this comment from Chief Todd Garrison. People are making judgments on things that were discovered or learned over the last 5 weeks. We didn't know a lot of this information over the first 4 days. But the way I see crime and justice and investigation is that the point of the 5-week investigation is to figure out that information and perhaps not let the most critical person in the case, Brian Laundry, slip away. Let me rephrase that. Drive away so incredibly easily. The chief's comments came this weekend at a police gathering in Venice, Florida. A panel was assembled to discuss law enforcement in that state. But, you know, as you can imagine, the Brian Laundry investigation came up, too. I certainly want to drill down on exactly what the chief said. But first, I want to bring in News Nation's Brian Enten, who watched this headline this weekend with a lot of interest because he's covered the story since the beginning. Okay, so, Brian, there was a lot of blame deflecting in all of the answers that the chief gave this weekend. Here is what the chief actually said about whether all eyes really should have focused on his jurisdiction of Northport. And I'm going to quote him. What a lot of people don't know, in June, Gabby and Brian moved out of their location and put a lot of stuff into storage, and they changed their address, and they moved to New York, and from there, they left for their cross-country adventure. My question to you here is the place of residence really the issue here, Brian? She was reported missing in New York. Yes, I get it. But her fiancé turned into his parents' driveway with Gabby's white transport van, and that driveway was in Northport, Florida. And Gabby, the owner of that van, was not in that van and ended up missing and dead. So I'm really struggling with this accommodation of it not being his jurisdiction.
Yeah, it's interesting, Ashley. Two things. First of all, the chief is owning up to the mistake to a certain degree. I mean, he did say in those comments that he believes in transparency and that he wanted to come out right away and tell the public, yes, we made a mistake here. They thought it was Brian, but it was actually Roberta, which, you know, all of our mouths sort of dropped open when we heard them first come out and say that. But he says he is trying to own up to it. The other thing is there was some confusion in the beginning, Ashley, about the jurisdiction that was going to be in charge of this missing persons case. There was an issue because Florida law says that the person has to be a resident of Florida for the case to be established in Florida. And in the beginning, they were trying to establish the case in New York. So I think that's what the chief was referring to in those comments.
But it's hard for me to come to terms with the fact that all of this was based in Florida when the Laundries would not speak. They knocked on that door. They became suspicious enough to put cameras up, not only on the front of the house, but the back of the house. So, yeah, it's your jurisdiction when the van and the guy show up in Florida without the owner of the van, you know, who's missing. So let me take you to that sort of series of days, because Chief Garrison really did discuss about becoming involved, right? And let me read for you what he said. Now, we know that by the time we became the lead agency, Brian had already left the house and presumably had already been deceased out in the Carlton Reserve. I have a lot of questions about that, not the least of which we do not know when Brian died. There was 5 weeks of the potential of Brian being dead. We have no idea that it was, you know, in the first or second day that he went on his walkabout. But I'm also curious about this whole notion that he says we became the lead agency 3.5 days after September 11th, which would be September 14th or 15th, Brian, which is the day after he went on the walkabout, and then the day that Roberta came home in the car and it wasn't Brian. So he was the lead agency right at that very time. And he was the lead agency when he said, we've got eyes on him. And he was the lead agency on the Friday when it was Brian's now officially missing. So I'm struggling with this whole notion that, well, we weren't the lead agency when it mattered.
Yeah, I think some of it comes down to semantics, and it's interesting because I think in one way the chief is trying to own the mistakes they made. In the other way, he's trying to say, well, technically, we weren't the lead agency in the beginning because technically Brian and Gabby left from New York, and at that point we thought the New York authorities were in charge of things. But you brought it up. Bottom line, lead agency or not, they were doing surveillance on the house. They were setting up cameras. They had an officer out there watching. He has admitted that himself. And he has admitted, bottom line, that the officer thought it was Brian returning home, but it was actually Roberta.
Okay, so to that point, Brian, I kind of had to pick my jaw up off the floor and put it back on my face when I heard this one. And this has to do with that moment of misidentification, which to me would have maybe evoked the most contrition in this case. Nah, I'm wrong. So here again, these are the words of the chief, quote, the surveillance team told me, Chief, Brian was seen going inside the house. It was 100% in my belief that what the team told me was accurate. There was nobody more surprised about that than me. As a leader, what do I do? Do I not tell the public what's going on? Do we conceal it, cover it up? No. People want open transparency and honesty from their law enforcement officials. Yes, we made a mistake. It was human error, but I still stand by my team. And to that I say, transparency is divine. And thank you for noting transparency. But I counted the days between this fiasco boondoggle business and the actual transparency. And Brian Enten, it took 40 days. 4-0. 40 days. If you're counting in weeks, that is 5 weeks for that transparency to happen, and only after the body was finally found in the reserve. So is 40 days really transparency?
And we were all wondering all of this time. I mean, I was the reporter who asked that question on that Thursday, do you know where Brian Laundry is? And he said yes, and he said it confidently. And we had no reason not to believe him or the police. They had been saying that all week. So I was sitting outside that house thinking to myself, they know where he is. He's either in that house in hiding and we haven't seen him, or he's someplace else, which is sort of what I was thinking at the time because I hadn't seen him coming and going, but police are following him and you know where he is. And it was just so interesting when we later learned that that wasn't the case at all. And you're right, it did take about 5 weeks for them to explain sort of what was going on behind the scenes, that, you know, that this officer doing surveillance had made such a big mistake.
Okay, Brian, stay with me. I want to bring in another very strong voice into our conversation. It's Chris Swecker. He's the former assistant director of the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division. You probably recognize him because he led the hunt for the Olympic Park bomber, Eric Rudolph. Okay, Chris, wow. This weekend, right? I didn't expect all this to happen, but it did. And I want to just bring special note to you because you know how this stuff works. I just watch it as a viewer, but you work in this stuff. And when it comes to this misidentification of Brian's mom, as Brian. Again, you know, middle-aged woman, wears flouncy blouses. She's kind of short, on the heavier side maybe. And then Brian, who's like a dude with a beard, who's tall and skinny and 23. This is the quote that I'm going to give to you now from the police chief. As a 30-year law enforcement veteran doing surveillance, this is not uncommon. And if any expert out there says it is, they're lying to you. So, Chris, is it not uncommon to make that kind of a surveillance blunder?
Well, I'll just say this was not their finest hour, and it's certainly no time to spike the ball in the end zone. That I don't know how much surveillance they've done within that department. They're a 17-person department, a chief and four sergeants and one lieutenant, so a third of them are officers, and one detective. So I doubt they've had much experience with surveillance. So I would question their frame of reference in terms of how to do surveillance and what types of surveillance there are. This should have been a preventative surveillance, the type of surveillance where you don't mind being noticed, that you're visible and you're aggressive and you're trying to deter certain conduct, that being fleeing the jurisdiction. Because they didn't have all the answers at that point. There may have been confusion about, you know, who was a lead agency and who wasn't. But the fact remains, as you pointed out, Ashley, Petito's van was right there. It was in his driveway. He had been there for 10 days without reporting her missing. He was there. So all the elements of a potential crime were sitting right there in that house in that driveway. So that should have been the focal point. I would not concede that this is the type of mistake that's made all that often.
I've done surveillance, too, and I'm not a police officer. I'm just a reporter. But I also know that if you decide to go to Starbucks, you do at your own peril. If you miss that thing that happens in 30 seconds to a minute, that's on you and your Starbucks. But whatever it was, they missed an entire car backing out of a driveway with a bearded kid in it and then somehow didn't get it that it was a mom coming back. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to ask you about, this one really kind of got under my skin. So this is what the chief said, quote, "I can tell you one thing, the amount of work that was done behind the scenes 24 hours a day from our team and the FBI working on the second floor of the police department was phenomenal work. That work led the search teams to locate Gabby Petito, deceased." Just let that sink in for a second. Let me repeat it. "That work led the search teams to locate Gabby Petito, deceased. I want to remind everyone, our primary focuses the first couple of days was to find Gabby. If Brian did go on the run, he would be found. I was confident of that." So, I don't even know what to ask, but I'm pretty darn sure that Red, White, and Bethune found Gabby and Brian's van and then were able to help the police find Gabby's remains. But I really am quite certain that it was not the Northport police chief who's now taking credit for that.
Yeah, again, they have one detective in that department. By the time when Gabby's body was found, that created federal jurisdiction. There may have been the peripheral involvement of the FBI up until that point, but once that body was found, I think the FBI went into high gear, and they have evidence response teams. They have the resources to man the call centers. They have the resources to chase down leads nationwide, put out appeals to the public, and follow up on those leads. So, you know, they may have been part of a much larger team. And when I say larger, more like a national level team of FBI and other law enforcement agencies. But I think he may be stretching a bit to say that their actions resulted in the location of Gabby's body. I don't think that's the case at all.
You're just a very wonderfully well-spoken, diplomatic person. I am not. And I want to bring Brian Enten back into our conversation, Chris, because he just came back from Wyoming, from Utah, retracing those steps. And Brian Enten, to be clear, it was Red, White, and Bethune spotting that van, going back over their social media feed, and then helping the authorities to find those bones, 1,000 feet that you walked through. I saw you forge the river up to your knees in water. It was not the Northport police that helped get the local authorities and medical examiner to Gabby's remains. Just walk me through that part again.
Yeah, bottom line, Ashley, it just is what it is. It's fact. We talked to the Bethune family. They are the ones who found the van. They had the dash cam video of the van. They created a YouTube video saying, "We think we have found Gabby's van," and they also called the FBI. And it was that tip and that YouTube video that the bloggers created that sent the FBI out to that area, and then it was just 1,000 feet from that van that Gabby's body was discovered. One other thing that's interesting, now the chief's sort of saying, well, Brian Laundrie was already dead, and we likely knew that at the time, and there was nothing we could have done. But let's not forget that, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Northport police, before they found the Laundrie remains in the swamp, telling us, oh, there's still a 50-50 chance that he could be alive. We still think he might be alive. FBI was still investigating all of these leads up on the Appalachian Trail. So they're now saying, oh, you know, we knew that he was dead, but that's not what they were telling us a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, he's out there saying, the police chief's out there saying, actually, even the Sarasota sheriff, Kurt Hoffman, got in on this game and said, by all accounts, he probably committed suicide and he was right out there where we thought he was. Who are you to say that? We don't have the autopsy back. We don't have the anthropology results back. We don't know how long, you know, Brian was out there. We don't know if he died on day 1, 6, 10, 20. We know he was skeletonized, but in that kind of heat and that kind of swamp and with those kind of animals, it doesn't take that long. It doesn't take too long to get there. All right. Well, I'm glad that you guys have, you know, made me feel like it's not just me, that I'm just livid at seeing this stuff. Like, stop with the attaboys, for heaven's sake. Brian Enten, thank you. Great work again. Chris Wecker, bless your heart. You're so gentle. I know that deep down you're probably like, you know, that law enforcement's better than this. But you're, again, very diplomatic. Thank you so much. Straight ahead.
Thanks, Ashley.
We are going to switch gears. This Alec Baldwin story, there's just a whole lot of things that have come at us. And not the least of which was this. The dying words of Helena Hutchins. And then the first public words from Alec Baldwin since her shooting death. And then some really indignant words from the Twitter sphere about the Baldwin family Halloween, that picture over there, right after they got real mad about, you know, having privacy. That's all next. Welcome back. The silence, it is deafening in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where the county sheriff is investigating the fatal shooting on Alec Baldwin's movie set. And as you can imagine, that silence is being filled. It was bound to be filled, right? That's a void that is just not going to stay empty. People are talking. Alec Baldwin is talking. The assistant director, who admits he messed up, he's talking. We even have what may be the last words spoken by Helena Hutchins as she lay bleeding inside that pretend church in New Mexico. According to an affidavit, moments after Baldwin fired a live bullet from the prop gun on the set, Helena slumped into the arms of a crew member and said she couldn't feel her legs. According to the LA Times, a boom operator said he looked into Helena's eyes and said, oh, that was not good. To which Helena replied, no, that was no good. That was no good at all. For his part, Joel Souza, the director who was wounded by the round that went right through Helena, yelled, what the F was that? That burns. The Times says that Baldwin dropped the gun and said over and over, what the F just happened? Now, that was all 11 days ago, and we don't yet know what happened. Not really, anyway. But now Alec Baldwin is a long way away from the Southwest desert, and over the weekend, he indulged some reporters who tracked down his family and him in Manchester, Vermont. He talked on the side of the road for about 4 minutes, and I want to play you a chunk of it, during which he seems irritated with his wife, Hilaria, as he does by the press that were in tow. And there is no question Hilaria is incensed by the press. This is a one in a trillion episode. I want to bring in now Hollywood publicist Roger Neal. Roger, I'm sure I don't have to tell you that that felt uncomfortable, and I could feel the contempt coming through to the press from both Alec and Hilaria Baldwin. And again, the press didn't do this, right? It's a little surprising to see this kind of reaction.
Well, you know, he has a history of sort of just speaking when he's not supposed to and saying things he's not supposed to. His wife has no business being in front of the media. She needs to step off to the side. I saw her taping, so she's videotaping what the media is asking him because they're going to need that later on. They'll need that. If there's a trial this goes to court, they're going to need that. So she was doing the right thing by recording what the media was asking him and what his responses were. However, she should have stayed out of the way and just let him have his moment with the media. I think that he should really be schooled on how to deal with the media and what to say. He's not somebody that can stay on message. He needs to stay on complete message if he's going to speak to the media or speak in front of the media, because anything he's going to say could be used in court if this thing goes to court.
Yeah, I think it's important to note there's a difference between paparazzi and news media as well. A woman was shot to death. And there is a death investigation, and there may be charges that bring prison for people who touched the gun and for people who produced the movie. So this is serious. This isn't cute. And no one has the right to demand when you get press and when you don't. And to that end, I just want to play a moment of Hilaria and how she reacted to the press and the demand that she made of the press. Have a look at this. Okay, so Roger Neal, privacy, 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 privacy. Go away, go home, treating, you know, the press there as though they can order them around. They can't. Yeah. But then the next day, Halloween came, and the Baldwin children have every right to go out for Halloween and have a private event with their family, absolutely. But then Hilaria decided to post these pictures on her social media. And for a woman who was demanding privacy, she just all of a sudden decided that she was going to ask for some publicity. And that wasn't the only picture. There were some, you know, pretty pictures of her posing with her daughters. And she said parenting is tough through all of this. You know, parenting through this has been an intense experience. Let me read some of the reactions that came to on the Twitterverse from this, Roger. Gemmell said, parenting through this has been an intense experience. Hilaria Baldwin says, I wonder how Matt Hutchins feels parenting Andros through his first Halloween without his mom. Why must this deranged lunatic make this about her? How are she and Alec Baldwin the victims here? And then Lorca said, the Baldwin kids should absolutely enjoy Halloween. This year, though, Hilaria Baldwin should have kept their festivities and herself off social media. Helena's son didn't get to enjoy this holiday celebrate without posting, Hillary. It's literally the least you could do. And MKW says, please stop trying to deflect blame. Also, your wife posting Halloween pics and feeling sorry for herself is completely tone deaf to this situation. It's hard to see the contempt and the demand for privacy followed within 24 hours of social media posting about our private lives and our private event.
I agree. You know, they should stay off social media. They should not be on social media right now. They should be on a social media blackout. She shouldn't be posting anything about her family or talking about how difficult it is to be a parent, because it shows her to be insensitive. It shows him to be insensitive. And it shows them to be very insensitive to a family who've just lost a wife and a mother. And there's another man in the hospital. I think he's still in the hospital, the assistant director. It makes them seem very insensitive. I understand what they're trying to do, but they're going about it the wrong way. He needs to listen to his publicist and take direction. He's an actor. He should be able to take direction. But, you know, when you're in a situation like this and your livelihood could be on the line, you could be looking at possibly going to jail or prison or whatever comes out of this. It's scary. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. And, you know, but for someone like Alec Baldwin, he's got to really take direction. His wife needs to be completely out of the picture and not be doing anything right now.
It's not helping him, that's for sure. Two quick pieces of news before I let you go, and that is that the sheriff confirmed tonight that Baldwin is being cooperative, and the other two, not so much. They've lawyered up, and they're not talking. And then also, Helena's funeral was this weekend in L.A., so it's very, very sad. Roger Neal, thank you. Thank you for being here tonight. It's good to see you again, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. When we come back, she takes her clothes off for a living, and then she performs sex acts, and she puts that on the internet. And you know what? That's all totally legal, right? It's totally legal. But should she have the right to volunteer at her children's elementary school? Some of the parents are saying, yeah, no. So what do you think? And do you know everything yet? Do you know just how raunchy the site is? We're going to talk about that next. Oh, man, man, that was a smash hit in 1968. Jeannie C. Riley, that's her right there on the right. It was Harper Valley PTA. It chronicled the effort of a miniskirt-wearing mom in a battle with the school PTA who was critical of her sexy looks. And a spoiler alert, if you're Googling this song right now, the mom, she just crushes it with a clap back at the PTA members who are lying, cheating, boozers, hypocrites, all of them. So there is a real-life version of this song playing out right now in Florida, with a social media twist that did not exist in the 1960s. I think it's fair to say really didn't exist. Victoria Treese has an OnlyFans account. That's the super sexy stuff that you have to pay for to see. And before you pop the popcorn and settle in for some serious content, I cannot show you most of it. But I can show you a very, very sanitized compilation. Victoria's stuff is... well, it's that, but it's also pretty raunchy. And it is definitely not the kind of content you want for your elementary school kids to see or actually really even know about or, God forbid, discuss. Still, Victoria was surprised when a fellow parent found out about her site and then had the principal ask that she refrain from volunteering at her two children's school events. And Victoria Treese is live with me now, along with her attorney, an old friend of mine, Mark Nijem. It's good to see you, Mark, and it's nice to meet you, Victoria.
It's great to see you.
Okay, so did I have that sort of story right? It was a fellow parent notifies the school and says, ah, yeah, there's all this stuff that she's doing, and it's porn, and she shouldn't be here at the school, and the school said, you shouldn't be here, and then it just got ugly from there. Is that right, Victoria?
So pretty much an email was sent in, and it contained photographs, and they pulled me in, and they said I'm no longer, allowed around children in the building.
And then you fought them and said, hold it, what I do in my private life and my job is my business, and I have the right to be in my kids' school. It didn't quite get restored to how you wanted it. But you're allowed to chaperone some of the trips that they're on. Is that correct?
Yes, but what I do doesn't go against any of the guidelines to be allowed in that school as a volunteer.
And so do the guidelines say anything about, moral turpitude or things that parents do or if they get in trouble or if they do these things? There's nothing that says you can't come in and be a volunteer here?
No, not at all. You just pass a background check at the beginning of the year for the additions program. And then after you pass that check, you get to be a volunteer. As long as you have no criminal history or record, you pass the background check. And I don't have a record.
Which you do not. Yeah,
no.
Which you do not. So,
Correct. Okay,
here's my problem with the television, and Mark knows this because he's been doing this for a long time with me. Gosh, we went back to the Casey Anthony case together for, days and days and days on end. The pictures that, Mark, I'm showing on TV, you know that I can't show a lot of the stuff that Victoria's had on her OnlyFans account, so it's hard for me to get the viewers to understand the true depth of the frustration of some of the parents who saw this stuff. Because I think our viewers might think, wow, what a bunch of prudes. We've seen this stuff everywhere. But the truth of the matter is there's some very raunchy pornographic material on there, Victoria. And I'm just going to have to say it's after 10 o'clock at night. So there's like graphic oral sex videos with what happens after the oral sex, and it's all visible. And so that's the kind of thing that, makes people recoil when you're talking about elementary school kids. What if that information got out and the kids were all talking about you, the mom of their friend?
Ashley, if I could speak to that, Victoria's pretty shy, believe it or not. And what the situation is, though, this was private. For 5 years, she volunteered at the school. beloved by the teachers, beloved by the administration, beloved by the students and their parents. And nobody knew anything. This was completely private. Nobody knew about a thing. It's what she did, private time, private life, taking care of her children as a single mother. And then one person, we still don't know who it is, has made a complaint. And with that, this, somebody at the school system acted arbitrarily and without due process. And then the principal was told, the principal's been really a fantastic person, but was told that she couldn't be around the children. And complete violation of every rule that exists. So 5 years, nobody knew a thing. It was never discussed. Nobody knew about it. But I'll say this, that the parents have come to her support like there's no tomorrow. And not only that, but multiple teachers have written her and supported her and even gone on her site because they think it's outrageous that what one does in their private life gets brought into the
voluntarily. Private's definitely different than having a public account that you just pay for. Public means there's access to the public. So I got to put a quick break in. And when we come back, I want to talk about the lawsuit. The plan is that Victoria wants to sue the school for $1 million. And I want to ask a little bit about that. And then also about your kids. I think they're second grade and fifth grade, Victoria. Is that right?
Kindergarten and fourth.
Oh, dear. They're little. Okay. So when we come back, I'm going to ask a little bit about that. We're back with Victoria and Mark after this. I'm back with Victoria Treese and her attorney, Mark Nijem. We're talking about the OnlyFans account that got all, you know, troublesome with the school, et cetera. So, Victoria, I have this question for you. The pictures that the parent who was really upset sent into the school to say, have you seen this? This is porn. Why are we letting this mother come in here if she's doing this business? Those were those really raunchy ones I described with the oral sex and the business afterwards and all the rest. And I just wondered if you see their point that they think that stuff is so far removed from elementary school, and God forbid anyone found out and started talking about it, and maybe even talked about it with your kids. Can you see their point?
I would like to make the point that whoever sent this in spent money to not only be on my OnlyFans page, but they also paid to unlock that video. So whatever adult did this, they paid and took the product that I put out.
They did, yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's paid
content
within
any
being
member
able to watch it, but I can't.
The public can do that,
it.
Yeah.
That
but that's okay.
Sense.
What I'm saying is the public can do that, and then they can see it, and that stuff can get out, and the kids at school can talk about it, and they're elementary school kids.
Would you be 18 years old to be on my page?
Well, in a perfect world, but truly, I have seen this happen, that kids who are far too young get access through older siblings and family members, and they see this stuff. So can you see the point of the parents who are a bit freaked out by this?
But we don't have that. Ashley, we have one anonymous person. We don't even know if it's a parent. Every other parent that we're aware of has lined up in support. It's important to point out, for 5 years, nobody knew about it. So one person came across it, sent it to somebody in the school system, and an arbitrary decision was made. Nobody knew about it. You have to be an adult, and you have to pay to get on the site. So this is not something that's distributed to children. It's really something that everybody does. Some people get paid for it. And if you're going to have a stand, maybe there's not some misogyny in here, possibly, because you have a woman who's doing something in her own free time, but somebody's watching it. So these fathers and these husbands are watching it. Why are they any less guilty if we're going to assign that type of position to her than the person who does it? It takes two.
And I was just about the misogyny part. I would think that the guy whose bits I saw in the video, if he were a parent, the same thing would happen. I don't know that it's about the Harper Valley PTA mom with the short skirt thing. I think it's about graphic pornography. So, Victoria, did you take that video down? Because when we looked, because, I mean, journalistically, I got to look at this stuff, right? But it wasn't available.
What was that?
It's available on the paid site. There's no public on any of this. You can't go on any public site
public.
She's ever had and
it
see any
public.
Of this.
It's public.
No, Mark, Ashley, it's not.
Mark, it's public if I can use a credit card and I can see it. It's not invitation only. It's public. You can
it's
see
private.
It if you
you've got to pay.
Yeah.
You've got to pay and you've
you
got to be
pay.
18 and up.
Right. You're a lawyer, my friend. You know that paying something doesn't make it private. You can still see it. So real quick question for you, Victoria. Do your kids...
Do they know about this stuff? Like, do they know the extent? Not just these, like, tasteful pictures, but do they know the other stuff? And if they found out, would you be upset?
Can
you
answer this? What was it?
Are your kids upset? She lost the audio on.
Okay, I'll ask it again. Victoria, if your kids found out about that stuff, the really dirty stuff that I was talking about, would you be upset that your 5 and 10-year-old kids, if they found out about it or saw it?
I made a choice to do this job so I could spend every second with my children and have more time with them than the average parent is allowed to have, to be able to volunteer at their school and be so involved in their life, which a lot of people wish that they could do, and I'm capable of doing that.
Share what you've done at the school.
Asked if you would be upset if your kids found out about it or saw it, would you be upset about it?
We all make children. Like, everybody in that school has to have children be there. Like, you're trying to put boundaries on something that is natural that people do. Like, I just don't understand. You're trying to make me look like a bad person. Whenever
no,
in reality,
I'm asking you because I close my door when I made my kids.
Yeah, me
and that
too.
Kind of thing.
I don't do any of this in front of my children because I do stuff when my kids are not at my house, and I work when I am not around my children. I'm a bad person.
So my question was, would you be okay with your parent, with your children seeing it? That was my question. I didn't call you a bad person at all. I just wanted to see how you felt about, you know, if little kids found out about it. That's all I wanted to know.
My little children would not find out about it.
I hope not. Listen, I appreciate you being bold and coming to talk about this real controversy, because it is. Like, there's one side that's not here tonight, the parents, and there's your side, and I appreciate it. And Mark, it's good to see you again.
Thank you, Ashley. It's always good to see
you guys.
But I'll say that the parents support her. Teachers support her. The children support her. So to say that parents
Well, the children,
don't,
come on. Let's be careful here. The kids haven't seen this stuff. And I don't know if all the parents have seen what I saw.
They're well aware. We know. We're getting 10 to 1. 10 to 1 they support her.
I got to jump because I've got Andrea Zendejas coming up. But thanks again. I do appreciate it, Victoria.
Good to see
Thank you.
You,
Mark. Me, Jim. Andrea Zendejas on the other side of the break.
Bye-bye.
Like it or not, OnlyFans is part of the vernacular, and there is nothing wrong with that as long as you're an adult. And we know someone who's been adulting for quite some time. Andrea Zendejas became a household name as the Bun Sporting Cop on Live PD. She spun that fame into fortune on an OnlyFans website. But she left the police department in order to do that. And she is exactly the voice to weigh in on this issue. Andrea, so good to see you again, my friend. I know you were watching that segment before. I also know that your OnlyFans site isn't a lot of that, you know, triple X super hardcore porn, right? So how do you feel about Victoria with the really hardcore porn stuff and the pretty pictures wanting to be in the elementary school and the parents being upset about it?
Well, first of all, I want to point out Victoria is being a mother to her children. And I think that's like number one. She's not out here, you know, selling drugs, whatever. Whatever she's selling on her OnlyFans, that's her business. But I think it's super important to point out she's very involved in her kid's life, regardless of what she does on her own time.
Do you think that the parents have any right to be kind of like freaked out about the porn part of it? Not just the lingerie pictures, but the really hardcore stuff?
I personally, but this is coming from me, I don't care what anyone else does in their personal time. I could care less. To me, it kind of sounds like maybe she rubbed someone the wrong way. And maybe a case of jealousy if it just came from one parent and she's been doing it for so long and no one's really, you know, had an issue with it. I think that it really sounds kind of like jealousy to me. And it's very, I mean, unfortunate for her.
I got about 20 seconds left, but I really need to get you on this. What if that stuff can get out, right? This stuff can get out, no matter whether it's an adult side or not. There's older siblings, there's all the rest. And what if that sparked the conversation, kids coming home and saying, what about, you know, Jimmy's mom? And again, I got about 20 seconds, but I want to get you on that.
Of course, it's something that we think about, right? It's something I think about, but I don't do most of the other things that some of these other models do. I don't. However, I'm still very cautious about what my children are exposed to and what they might think of me or what they might see of me. So, I mean, of course, it's always in the back of your mind if, you know, kids start talking, because kids are very cruel, and, you know, the kids will be the one to suffer, of course.
And it's an uncomfortable topic for other parents if they have to start, you know, discussing oral sex with a, you know, a second or third grader. But you know something, I miss you on Live PD, and I'm always glad to have you back on the show. Will you come back again?
Sounds great. Or you can come see me.
All right, Andrea. Love you. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.